And for that reason, Israel has a strong appeal to these right-wing organizations, right, and leaders who love deportations, who love building walls. Israel is seen. Israel is seen as a kind of model.
Well, Adam Schatz, we thank you so much for being with us, U.S. editor of the London Review of Books. We'll link to your piece, your latest one, The World Since October 7th. And we're going to have you back to talk about your book, The Rebel's Clinic, The Revolutionary Lives of Franz Fanon. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org. Non-commercial, community-powered radio. Well, 1 o'clock on Thursdays is the time for the Northern Sun Radio News Show with your host, Don Olson. I'm going to just, before we get to dealing with the Ukraine again, last week I had a program on Zen City, and they've shown me the they're trying to get signatures on here that we can use. And this says, I demand that the Minneapolis City Council and Mayor Frey cut the $500,000 contract with Zen City, an Israeli surveillance company. Zen City's technology has been used nationally by law enforcement to surveil racial justice protests in response to the police killing of black people. The Minneapolis Police Department, with its violent and racist history, should not be allowed to use this technology. Zen City's technology mirrors what is used to enforce Israel's illegal apartheid system in Palestine. The city of Minneapolis should not be contracting with a company complicit in human rights violations, war crimes, and genocide. We demand they cut the contract with Zen City. And so that's, if you come across a copy of it, or you can go to Cut the Contract, Linktree, L-I-N-K, T-R-E-E, Cut the Contract, Linktree. So that's going on right now. We could probably save at least half the money from that contract if it was only set up by the mayor.
The war comes home.
The war comes home, exactly. And that was Dave Gooding, who is going to be talking with me about the this talk. We're going to play a little bit of Colonel Douglas McGregor, U.S. Army, retired, on Trump's threats are not stopping Russia's war aims. This is on Daniel Davis's Deep Dive. Dave is a local journalist and activist, and we'll be getting to Vets for Peace about halfway through the show. So this was posted on July 15th, Tuesday.
D.C., talking about how this is Biden's war. I'm not on anybody's side, and 50 days isn't very long. Welcome back, Colonel Douglas McGregor, defense and foreign policy analyst, former advisor to Secretary of Defense, highly decorated combat veteran, and friend of the show. Welcome back, as always, Doug. Can't hear you, actually.
Okay, how's that?
There we go. That's what I'm talking about there. Don't want to lose that. Yeah, listen, that's just some crazy stuff in the last 24 hours. First of all, let's just set the stage if anybody hasn't heard. Trump had been teasing this big announcement that was going to come on Monday since the end of last week, and a lot of people were speculating about what it may be. And then when it dropped, it was kind of a whimper instead of a shout. But now Trump's trying to put a good face on it and say, no, this is actually a good thing. First of all, just kind of what's your assessment of what the hype was and what you think is what you think of what was announced?
Well, I think it turned into something of a nothing burger based on everything that Lindsey Graham had insisted was going to happen. I guess something must have happened between the time that Lindsey Graham was on the golf course with Trump and Trump's decision to do something. The more I see of President Trump, the more I realize that he has made the transformation from businessman and marketing genius to a purely political animal. I mean, sort of standing there and saying, you know, I'm on the side of humanity is utterly ridiculous. Unless you're smoking crack and you're sitting in the corner in a dark room, you know that President Trump could have ended the war in Ukraine very, very quickly. All he had to do was say, look, this is not in the interest of the American people. We have no interest in what happens in eastern Ukraine. We want to promote peace, however. So I am now ending or suspending all further aid to Ukraine, withdrawing all U.S. military intelligence and other personnel from Ukraine. In which case, it would have been made perfectly clear to everybody that we were through with this and we were not going to continue it any longer. That would have then created an atmosphere conducive to some sort of arrangement arrived at by the Russians and the Ukrainians. But he did the opposite. He doubled down on what Biden was doing, frankly. And he refused to admit that this is a terrible mistake that in which we should have never engaged. So now I think he fully owns it, Dan. It's his war. And here's the bottom line for Donald Trump. He's losing. He doesn't want to lose. He says he dislikes losing. Well, I would say he's lost this one. And the best that he can do is sort of walk out of the room and hope that nobody notices he was ever there and change the subject, because that's where we're headed.
You know, you said he's doubling down on the Biden policies. I would argue that he's fractioning down on the Biden policies, because before Biden left in May of 2024, they passed a $61 billion package for Ukraine, which didn't even slow down the Russian advance at that time. Actually, the amount of territory Ukraine lost and the troops they lost accelerated after that was actually passed. It was probably due to many reasons. But now Trump, according to Axios yesterday, has loosened the bonds a little bit, has a half of $1 billion for the 2026 fiscal year budget and about $10 billion of other help. So that's like 1/6 of what Biden did. And if that produced nothing, what can anybody expect from what's going to happen on the terms of the weapons right now?
Well, militarily, as you and I have discussed for a very long time, this war ended some time ago. There is no chance for any sort of Ukrainian victory. In fact, it'll be a miracle if the Ukrainian state survives. But I think we have to keep something else in mind. When I said double down, the Financial Times reported within the last 24 hours that President Trump spoke on the phone to Zelensky and apparently asked Zelensky if he had the capability to hit Moscow and St. Petersburg and some other locations. And Zelensky apparently said, no, not really. And he said, well, you've got to do that. We've got to get you stuff and help you do that. This is Trump talking out of both sides of his mouth. If he says he's not really on any side but on humanity's side, what in the hell is he telling Zelensky that he needs to attack deep into Russia and disrupt Russia or destroy Russia's capabilities? The whole thing stinks to high heaven. And I think, let's be frank, I think the Russians have walked away from Donald Trump. They don't see any evidence for any honesty or integrity in the conduct of our foreign policy. That's also being true in connection with Iran. We pretended that we were negotiating, and then we assisted the Israelis in launching a surprise attack. And then, of course, we weighed in ourselves. So I don't think anybody believes this any longer. And I think it's Trump's fault. He's just not being honest at all about anything.
Well, and what he says in that clip we just played there, that I've gotten a lot of wars solved over the last 6 months. I just hadn't got this one yet. I'm not sure what he's talking about. What wars do you think he may have in mind that he's ended?
Well, he likes to take credit for halting the war between Pakistan and India. And I don't see any evidence that he had anything to do with it. But that's part of his game. I don't know what else he claims to have halted or stopped. I think he's arguing that the war with Iran is over.
I think that is one of them.
Good luck with that. As far as the Iranians are concerned and everybody else, we're a co-belligerent with the Israelis. There is no peace settlement. There is no agreement. There doesn't appear to be any willingness to negotiate an agreement. And even though I think behind the scenes we've said to the Iranians that we would go back and revisit the nuclear issue, they effectively said no thanks. For the same reason, the Russians, I think, are just pressing on to do what they're going to do because nobody believes us anymore. You know, I'm glad you brought up this sort of demonstration of an unbridled arrogance on the part of Donald Trump. Well, I've solved all these wars and I deserve the Nobel Peace Prize kind of nonsense. Let's stop for a minute and consider this. This is 80 years ago in 1945 at the Victory Parade in Berlin. Harry Truman flew over for it, and of course Eisenhower stood next to him, and they watched, you know, the masses of American troops and materiel and tanks and artillery and everything else march by. After it was over, Truman took Eisenhower's side, was very happy, very proud, as you would expect Truman to be. Remember, Truman was a fairly simple man. This is not some sort of a product of the Ivy League or anything. He was a child of the school of hard knocks. And he looked at Eisenhower and he said, General Eisenhower, you know, this is magnificent. And we all owe you a lot for what you've done. He said, I want to award you the Medal of Honor. And Eisenhower, you know, reeled back in shock, and he said, Mr. President, you can't do that. And President Truman said, well, of course I can. I'm President of the United States. He said, sir, you don't understand. I have never been in combat. I have never, ever concealed that truth. Everyone knows that I have never been in combat. And, you know, it would be a disservice to all of those men who died in action and won this decoration to give it to me. Please, Mr. President, don't mention that again. That's simply not appropriate. Can you imagine Donald Trump say, in addition to the Medal of Honor, I also deserve the DSC, the Distinguished Service Cross, and by the way, let me send you a list of all the other decorations. I mean, I'm just sort of sick to death of all of this self-aggrandizement. It's unbecoming. It's offensive. It's sickening.
Yeah.
You know, when we were on active duty in the Army, more than once we joked, I'm sure, about all of these generals in Latin America who were bedecked with medals from top
right.
to bottom, who'd never done anything, never seen any action. You know, this sort of thing was bothersome. This is out of control, and it doesn't help us. It hurts us as a nation. We could use a serious dose of humility right now. And I don't see any of that manifesting itself anytime soon with our president.
Yeah, I think that's going to be imposed from the outside because it's going to continue on because it seems to have traction on the inside, at least among his followers. Hey.
So this is from Tuesday. Colonel Douglas MacGregor, who is a advisor to the Secretary of Defense in the first Trump president term, and he's a combat veteran in the armored division. Trump's threats are not stopping Russia in its war aims. We have Dave Gudnick here for this period, and Dave, why do we keep looking at this war that we were told hundreds of times as a molding public opinion that it was unprovoked and that Russia is the problem and that it continues today? And you, you're very concerned about it, as I am.
Well, the campaign is very longstanding. We could start at least with 1991, when the Cold War ended, and the campaign against Russia against the, since then has demonstrated at least one important thing, and the Russians have realized this too. The war on them is not ideological, because it's no longer against communism, it's against Russia. And this actually predates communism too, and I've been looking into the history of Russophobia. So I don't want to get too far off on that, but the point is, the longstanding Russophobia has given rise to the modern war and attempt to break up Russia and regain the disaster capitalist era of the 1990s under Yeltsin, when we almost had our fingers on the resources and riches of the world's greatest, largest commodity producer, that is Russia. So I'm giving you what I think is the context. The other main reason, of course, besides the historical factors I just referred to, is the fact that it's the only country in the world is that a nuclear power equal or greater than the United States. So these are key reasons. We want to be the hegemony, hegemonic power. We want to be the most powerful and dominant force in the world, and for a few years we were. Russia threatens that. Not Russia alone, of course, but they've been a key focus of this. So these are some of the things going on. And the unprovoked part is just a propagandistic point repeated over and over and over, to, even though it's a lie. People heard it so many times, they think it's true. And the strategy, again, dates back to the 1990s, when our foremost diplomat, George Kennan, was warning against the plan to expand NATO. And Brzezinski, in his 1997 book, was pinpointing exactly that Ukraine was the key to the whole expansion of NATO strategy. This is why the Russians keep insisting in the negotiations, conversations, that fundamental to this resolution, or to any possible resolution, is an end to NATO expansion. And this is why a fundamental demand is NATO need to get out of Ukraine and stop its military and intelligence support for Ukraine. This is actually the number one Russian demand of several to actually have any serious negotiations and before a ceasefire can happen.
So there's a whole history of, along the way, but most recently was in March, April of 2022, when there was an agreement signed and the war would have stopped after 1 month or so.
Yeah, there was an agreement in 2014 and 15 when the democratically elected Yanukovych government had been overthrown with Western and U.S. help. And the country's been divided for many years between West and East, and there was overthrow of a government that attempted to look both ways and have relations both ways. And right after that, they'd started prohibiting the Russian language, discriminating against the Eastern Orthodox Church. This is the Kiev authorities that were doing this with with American Western backing. And they started bombarding the Eastern Russian-dominated Oblast in the Donbass, and so the war directly actually began back then in 2014 and 2015 with at least 14,000 mostly civilians killed by bombardment by the Kiev forces, augmented by NATO training and armaments and so on, and U.S. intelligence and so on. So the war, which is a civil war, was predicted over and over, and we did it because we knew it would be a civil war that would provoke Russian intervention. So it was planned and provoked, not unprovoked. It was planned and provoked for years. And they had a settlement back then, the Minsk agreements, which later Angela Merkel and Hollande from France agreed that they had never actually intended to enforce. They were the signatories, but they used the period instead to arm Ukraine for war on Russia. So this was a betrayal, the first of many, which is why McGregor said elsewhere, why should Russia trust us on anything anymore? We went back on the 2014-15 Minsk agreements and the agreement that Don just referred to in 2022, which was in Istanbul, would have also avoided a lot of the slaughter and loss of territory by Ukraine. And we went against that when our errand boy Boris Johnson told Ukraine, no, don't sign it. We'll support you. We'll back you. We'll fight Russia to the last Ukrainian, which is what they're doing. They're slaughtering Ukraine on behalf of this larger strategy. The larger strategy is war on Russia.
It is during this time when Russia knew that the U.S. had was behind the overthrow of the government of the Ukraine, and that's when they decided to seize the Crimea to protect their warm water plant at for their naval fleet, Sevastopol, because they saw what was going to happen, that the Crimea had been transferred from Russia during the Soviet Union back in about 1954 by Nikita Khrushchev. And then, so they did hold an election there, and it was overwhelmingly to go along with it becoming part of Russia.
Yeah, there were a lot of international observers there for that election, too, and the population was predominantly pro-Russian, so it was not a surprising result.
So unless you know this history of the Ukraine, you think it all began in February 2022, but there's a history that leads up to it that puts it all in place. And that's what we've been trying to do in this.
Yeah, the history, as I mentioned, is NATO expansion. And also we want to weaken Europe's dependence on Russia, which was driving or supporting thriving German and other European economies. And so the U.S. sponsored one of the greatest terrorist incidents in history, with blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline, and you don't hear much discussion of it, but it's very clear, thanks to, you know, various investigators, including Seymour Hersh, that we did it. And if you look at the politics, it's clear we did it. We've been worried about this since 1980, when Anthony Blinken wrote a book saying we got to cut off the Siberian gas from Europe because it's going to increase dependency of the Europe economy on Russia, and this is what we wanted to avoid. So this is part of the war as well. This is what they want to avoid, why we blew up the pipeline, and Europe is now suffering economically hugely because their leaders, a bunch of globalists and vassals of the United States, are going along with this campaign, which is basically committing economic suicide on the part of the European leaders. And the EU is just a subordinate of NATO. And NATO is a subordinate of our global military empire and our plans for dominance.
Yes, the Russian oil and gas was much cheaper. And when it was blown up, then the U.S., we'll sell you some. Of course, it's three times the price.
Biden stood next to Chancellor Scholz while Scholz silently was humiliated, and the reporter at the press conference, the two of them were up front, asked about the pipeline, and Biden assured them that we were not going to allow it to operate. The reporter said, well, how can you do that? This is a German and European project. And he said, don't worry, we're going to make sure it doesn't work, doesn't put into operation. So that was as clear as you can get, a prime moment in modern history when it showed the U.S. was willing to destroy this project and weaken the German and European economies for the sake of their larger warring strategy.
Well, let's get back to some more of this deep dive with Daniel Davis, with Colonel Douglas McGregor, retired U.S. Army, on Trump's threats are not stopping Russia war aims. And then we'll be getting to the Fester Peace. That was a big to do coming up nationally.
Second, the very subject that the Colonel was talking about regarding Moscow being bombed, and Trump did weigh in on it in this Q&A that he just had. It's very quick. I just wanted to alert you to it right here, right now.
Yeah, roll it.
Should Zelensky target Moscow, sir? Should Zelensky target Moscow or deeper into Russia?
No, he shouldn't target Moscow.
Is that why you...
Well, I mean, at least that's good that that's the case. Of course, you never know whether he says something in public is different than what he says in private. I hope that that is the truth and not the other report, but well, I guess that's one thing.
Yeah, but you just hit the nail on the head again. He contradicts himself repeatedly on a number of different issues. I want this. I don't want this. You know, I'm disappointed in President Putin. And President Putin and I had a great conversation. I mean, what is it, Mr. President? I'm not sure. I'm not sure he remembers all of the various things that he says on the spur of the moment.
Well, that's even more troublesome, but not shocking is the possibility, because I recall on that July 3rd phone call when Trump got off the phone, all the readout from the White House was all positive. And yeah, we had a good conversation, you know, and I told him I want these things. No comment about anything negative about Putin. And Putin's readout unequivocally said that he told him. Yeah, he did. That's a part of the readout on the Russian side. There's our president also said that Russia will achieve its goals, that the elimination of the root causes that led to these, and we will not retreat from these goals. That's what was said on the phone, and yet Trump seemed to think it was a good until later on when Putin actually acted on what he said and continued to move forward. Now, I want to ask, related to what you just said, about what we can make from this 50-day claim from Trump, because he says he's going to give Russia 50 days to come up with a ceasefire, or not a ceasefire. Well, yeah, I guess it's a ceasefire, some kind of a deal, or he's going to put on all these sanctions. We'll talk about the sanctions in a second. But this is also the same guy that said he's going to have this done before he gets into office, 24 hours after he gets into office, 100 days, then about 30 days. Then there was a two-week period in there. All of those have come and gone. There was at the time it was just a few matter of days. That obviously didn't happen, and now here we have 50 days. What do you make of all these time frames that Trump keeps giving and then ignoring?
I think he's trying to postpone the inevitable. He did not want to go public after he gave more thought to the discussion with Senator Graham. I think he sat there and he said, you know, Lindsey, you make a lot of good points, and I think you're probably right. I probably ought to do this. Then he left, and who knows who he talked to, because my experience, limited though it is with him, is that he's very influenced by the last person with whom he talks, all right? So somewhere along the line, he talked to some other people, and he backed off, and he said, well, maybe that's not such a good idea. You know, maybe I shouldn't push this confrontation with the Russians. Indeed, he should not. It's very dangerous right now, given the attitude in Russia towards us, and towards what we've been doing, not only in Ukraine and Eastern Europe, but also in the Middle East. So I think he backed off. And then he said, well, what do I do then? Well, let me think about that. Well, I'll give a new deadline, you know. New deadline, 50 days. Who knows? Maybe this will work itself out over the next 50 days. I mean, I'm serious. I think that's kind of the way he thinks. And the truth is that in 50 days, if the Russians want to do it, they could be on the Polish border. There's nothing else out there now. There really isn't. The bridges are intact. There's nothing to stop the Russian military from crossing at several points along the Upper River. I think there's enormous pressure right now on President Putin to do just that, to march right into Kiev and put an end to this heinous regime and this criminal gang that has been pushing this war and killing at least 1.5 to 1.8 million of its own soldiers in pointless fights that they can't win. We don't even know what losses are in the civilian population. But I think it's, I'll give them 50 days and we'll see where we are. It's what many politicians do. They kick the can down the road. So we'll kick this down the road. And there's the other point too, is don't underestimate his assumption that maybe in 30, 40, 50 days, no one will remember what he said anyway. You know, only now, I mean, just look at the Epstein business. Now we're running film of Bongino and Cash Patel, and President Trump sold his son, Don Jr. who I think is a very solid guy, actually. And unfortunately, what they're all doing is they're showing them talk about Epstein. Oh, we got to get Epstein. Epstein, everything has to be released. And all of a sudden now, what are we getting? Oh, well, we can't release everything. Ostensibly because too many people on their side, as well as the opposite, are all in the files. I think these things are beginning to catch up. So I think he's taking a risk by saying, well, if in 50 days, then if this isn't resolved, we'll do other things. And then hoping that maybe it'll resolve itself or be forgotten, because that's not happening anymore. He's being held accountable now.
There's no shortage of video footage of all those things you're talking about here. And one video footage that's very poignant here right now, you've mentioned Lindsey Graham a couple of times. He went on Face the Nation on Sunday, which we've talked about already, where he was emphatic about saying that there's going to be a sledgehammer, sanctions come down, that there's going to be seizing Russian assets, and that we're going to bring massive new aid. And then when it came across, and when Trump talked about, there was no talk about any kind of seizing Russian anything, just the 50 days of secondary sanctions, which probably will never go into effect anyway. They wouldn't work. And then this trickle of new information, so completely different from what Lindsey Graham said on Sunday. Well, on Monday, Sean Hannity gave him a very friendly mic and asked him about the contradiction.
President Trump has restored America. He bombed those facilities in Iran. He gave them 60 days, and Iran played games with Trump, and he bombed them on 61. He has been trying to get Putin to the table. He believes Putin is playing him, and he changed the game today. What did President Trump do today? He's selling weapons to NATO to benefit Ukraine. It is good for the American economy. These factories that exist in America that make weapons, they will be selling those weapons to NATO. Europe will be paying for it, and Ukraine would benefit. But he also told Putin, I'll give you 50 days to end this war. And if you haven't come to the peace table to end the war by 50 days, in 50 days, I'm going to put 100% tariff on all the countries that buy your oil and gas and defund your war machine.
Yeah, we'll see if that turns out here, but what do you make about that? I want to zero in on one part first, where he's talking about, yeah, it's going to make us a lot of money. I mean, he says it out loud, doesn't even hide behind it. We're going to sell, and it turned out to be somewhere around $10 billion worth of ammunition to NATO to pay us to give to Ukraine. But then the question has to be, wait, there's been a lot of news that our arsenals and our stockpiles of these key ammunition systems are not sufficient for our own potential future needs. So what do you make of that, that we seem to be going now below what was the minimum standard, and what impact is this going to have on anything?
I'm told by reliable sources that are familiar with the numbers of missiles on hand for use by the Navy and the Air Force in particular, that we have about 8 days worth of missiles, whether it's air-to-air missiles, or it's ground-to-air missiles, or it's strike missiles, whatever it happens to be. You know, the SM series of missiles, Patriots, theater high-altitude air defense missiles. 8 days and we're out. And it was said to me, look, we can fight a conventional war for 8 days, and then we have to go nuclear. Well, stop and consider that. We have to go nuclear because we have no other means. I don't know if President Trump has been thoroughly briefed on that. I don't think Lindsey Graham cares, frankly. But President Trump needs to be aware of just how low the arsenal is right now in terms of numbers. Because that's not the case, as we know, on the other side. And right now, Iran in particular is growing stronger and more robust and more capable with each passing day. I would argue the same is true for Russia and China. So, you know, it's hard to connect the rhetoric with reality. We could talk ourselves into a position from which it will be difficult to retreat. That's what happened with Lyndon Johnson in Vietnam, and I think it could happen with President Trump. So making these policy pronouncements unconnected to reality is dangerous, because at some point, somebody somewhere is going to call your bluff. We've been very lucky thus far that hasn't happened. And people misread that. You know, they assume, well, because the Russians haven't said no thanks. And by the way, if you do this to us, we'll do the following to you. That hasn't happened. And they think it hasn't happened because they believe that we are invincible, invulnerable, and unassailable, and that Russia is weak, poorly led, on the verge of collapse, and all this nonsense. I mean, these perceptions, regardless of what's happened during the war in eastern Ukraine, have never changed. Perhaps it was you that brought it up earlier when we were talking. Somebody said, well, look, they've had all this time. They dominate the battlefield. They've only advanced and taken another 1% of Ukraine. Well, first of all, gaining ground has always been much less important to the Russians than destroying the Ukrainian forces. And this is a problem we have in the mentality of the United States Armed Forces. You and I have seen this in action. We've got to go out there and gain ground and then cleanse the ground behind us of all potential enemy, when the real focus should always be the destruction of the enemy. Once the enemy's forces are gone, there's not a great deal that can be done to stop you from doing anything. That's where the Russians are right now. They've destroyed, for all intents and purposes, the Ukrainian armed forces, and now we're going to ship more things over there. Who's going to use them? Who's going to be trained to use them? Well, that's a question nobody answers. And remember that 40 to 50% of everything we send over there ends up on the black market. If they can do it, they'll do it. We've got people running around with Javelin missile systems in Mexico in the cartel. So God knows where half of this equipment ends up.
So we're listening to Colonel Douglas McGregor, U.S. Army retired, on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive program from Tuesday that was posted. And both of them are combat veterans. Dave, you have some comments you'd like to make?
Well, I'm glad he emphasized that the divorce between rhetoric and reality is what's happening right now. And, of course, there's prior examples of this kind of thing, such as Vietnam was mentioned. But I saw a good description of the current narcissistic president and his change one day, change the next day kind of behavior. Trump is flailing because he's failing. We're failing diplomatically. We're failing militarily. The sanctions and economic war is failing. And I don't think they know what to do except escalate, because the war industry and their financier backers is the most powerful force in this country. And unfortunately, Trump's instincts, which might have been toward peaceful resolution and may still be, are overwhelmed by the institutional force of the war industry in this country.
The military-industrial complex.
And as McGregor also indicated, why should Russia or Iran or China trust us anymore? We violate agreement after agreement. The anti-ballistic missile treaty under Bush, the intermediate nuclear force treaty under Trump, the 2014-2015 Minsk agreement, as was mentioned earlier, the 2022 agreements, as was mentioned earlier. And now, look at what they did to Tehran after saying, yeah, we'll be back for negotiations on Monday. And so why should anyone trust us anymore? And, you know, in business or a relationship or international relations, when you lose trust, you're in a deep hole. And what's the strategy? Right now, it appears to be dig deeper.
And there's a lot of people worried about possibilities of nuclear war. And yesterday, Democracy Now! Had a very good thing about how much people are, both political people as well as artistic people, because this is the anniversary of the very first nuclear weapon that was detonated, called Trinity. This was in the New Mexico, and that's when they didn't know for sure whether the whole world would be destroyed by this, because once you get a chain reaction going, well, they thought of a lot of things, but nobody could quite say for sure that it wouldn't lead to just a total wipeout. Well, the total wipeout is a possibility if we set things off in terms of problems with the atmosphere and the land, et cetera.
We do know a lot more right now, and they're massaging the public to think about nuclear war as if we could survive it. Gee, here's some places where you're more likely to survive. These kind of articles are actually appearing, well, not by accident, because, again, the war industry works through the media to massage whatever narrative or counter-narrative they want. And one of them, which is quite alarming, in the prior Democracy Now! Speaker was referring to this as well. They're promoting acceptance of war, you know, just generally through this article, that speaker, and all kinds of stuff, promoting the idea that we could, you know, possibly contemplate and win a nuclear war. This is the kind of insanity that's being returned to the discussion.
Well, that's, as promised, wanted to bring in Dave Logsdon, who's the president of the local Vets for Peace, Chapter 27, here in the Twin Cities, because there's a big national convention coming on. I was so impressed at the 2018 convention that was held in St. Paul. It was astounding, all the people I met and all the information I absorbed from that. But Dave, why don't you talk a little bit about what's coming up?
Yeah, welcome, Don, and welcome to my show. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm honored to be on your show. Anyway, the convention is coming up. It's the 40. It's our 40th anniversary convention. It's going to be in Las Vegas, and we will be at the University of Las Vegas. University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And it's going to be air conditioned. It's 110 degrees. And you wonder, why in the world would you have a convention in Las Vegas in the summertime? Well, it's going to be all air conditioned. I don't even know if I have, I'll pack shorts. Yeah, because it's like, it'll be really cold all the entire time. Anyway, it's the 40th anniversary. It's the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War, and since many of our members are Vietnam veterans, as is I am, and it's the 80th anniversary, as you alluded to, of the dropping of the atomic bomb. The atomic bomb, the entirety of my life, I was 6 months old when they, 5 months old, when they dropped that bomb on Hiroshima. And so almost the entirety of my life, I don't remember much in the first few months of my life, but the entirety of my life has been under the onus of a nuclear attack, a nuclear a possibility, a reality. And we made that terror possible by dropping that bomb. No other country has ever dropped a nuclear bomb, an atomic bomb, on a civilian population. And we did it on two cities. In fact, this August 6th, you correct me if I'm wrong, but at 7:30 in the morning, they usually have a yearly event at the Lake Harriet Japanese Garden, right there by the Rose Garden on the eastern side of Lake Harriet. That is a beautiful event. Usually we do a bell ringing. They'll usually have song and commemorate that. So that's coming up. Today, there's a big event going on downtown, right down by the courthouse at 6 o'clock today, and that's the Making Good Troubles event sponsored by Indivisible. And, of course, as we all know, a lot of the Indivisible people were the invisible people when Biden was in office because well, the one good thing that Trump did, and I'll say with a caveat on that, an asterisk to it, is that he got a lot of people in the streets because a lot of Democrats that were holding their powder and not becoming activists suddenly rediscovered their activist roots. So I always say they were the invisible people, and they added a D and became the indivisible people, which is good. We're glad to have them out there in the streets because That's the only thing that's going to get things changed and getting more people involved in the discussion. So I'm not being too sarcastic, I don't think, about their participation or non-participation when Biden was president. But it's amazing what the change of party leadership in the White House will do to the population, especially the liberal population.
Well, you know, and they did quite well with the No King's Day, and there was estimated to be some 5 million people across the country, because people have been really, they're scared to death for this democracy, as well as this Yahoo that uses the some sort of emergency order that he found somewhere in on the record that he's using to justify a lot of what he's supposedly gives him the right to make all these unilateral decisions.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. I went to the Guthrie Theater last Saturday for Cabaret, which is about the coming of the Nazi Party.
I tried to picture you at the Guthrie Theater, but yeah, go ahead.
No, I have season tickets. I like theater.
Okay.
And the but the point of it is they made that it was Hitler used this so-called emergency to carry out many of his nefarious aims and try and buffalo the whole society along until it was too late. But go on. So people, everybody who was there was really concerned. It was quite a bit. It was a good production about in Berlin and then after that.
Interesting. That sounds like a good show to check out.
And also in Germany, just historical footnote, the financiers in Germany, the bankers, once they saw which way the wind was blowing, backed Hitler, and that was key to his rise. And some U.S. financiers and business people also supported Hitler.
Yeah, interesting, huh? You know, anyway, getting back to the convention, if you go to veteransforpeace.org and you click on the convention icon on the webpage, it'll give you all the information. If you want to join us virtually, because it'll be a hybrid convention, because I think that's worked pretty well for a lot of people who either can't afford or are unable physically to attend.
Where do we find that? How do we find it?
Veteransforpeace.org. It's one word. Veteransforpeace.org. Very easy. Very simple. But it's going to be an interesting program. We've got a lot of stuff. We will be doing in-person action at the ICE headquarters in Las Vegas and have somebody from the Culinary Union in Vegas who are fighting a really strong fight against the ICE deportation people. And it's really hitting them hard in that hospitality industry in Vegas, because there's so many workers are Latino people. And so, that'll be part of the convention, but there'll be a lot of different programs and speakers. And so should be pretty good. Should be, I'll be there. Our chapter will make a big imprint on the convention. We have our Save Our VA people will be there with their literature and trying to spread the word on that. So I think there's a lot of areas that we're under attack here on the left. I just got on my phone breaking news: the Senate voted to defund money to
Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which will affect this station. I think 7% of your funding here comes from that fund. So this is hitting close to home. And I would encourage people, and I know it's not Pledge Week, but for me it's always Pledge Week. I'm a sustaining member, so I give every month. And to become a sustaining member, like I give $10 a month, that's 35 cents a day, to keep KFAI here and thriving. So I think we all need to step up now, because we're not going to get that money from the federal government anymore. And I think we want to keep this amazing community experiment of KFAI thriving and going on forever.
Well, thank you, Dave Logsdon, president of our local Vets for Peace, Chapter 27.
And pitchman for KFAI.
And let me tell you about a couple other things coming on. Strike solidarity, commemorate Bloody Friday and the strikes that made Minneapolis a union town.
I'll be there.
This Sunday, July 20th, from 2 to 3 p.m., you can join with union representatives, activists, and community on the 91st anniversary of the Minneapolis trucker strike of 1934. Now, it's downtown, and it's 7th Avenue and 3rd Street North. And it's at the site of the memorial plaque of the old Sherwin Women Williams building corner, and there'll be a lot of things going on.
Yeah. I'm a retired Teamster myself, and I'll be there for that.
Good stuff in Flower City last weekend and this weekend, too. I'd want to make sure Don mentions that, also has to do with the labor struggle.
Yeah, that was great. Larry Long had a wonderful little concert he did, and it was like Larry was reactivating his roots as being a Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, troubadour, singing for labor rights and solidarity forever. It was great.
Yep.
Good. Well, it goes on for several Saturdays at the Ornamental Iron, which is now known as the Ivy Building, which is now a arts building, but they're having a demonstration. I mean, a place where you can go and hear things this coming Saturday, starting at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
That'll be on the 19th, and then 3 o'clock, a panel, workers and the bosses, what caused the riot, and then on July 26th, at 1 o'clock, there'll be a talk.
And Don, that's right off of the bike trail. Have you got like the 27th Avenue, right off the bike trail?
26th Avenue, but read that last one, Don.
26.
Workers and bosses would cause the riots, and then Ornamental Iron to Ivy Arts. And it's there's a very good article in this July issue of the Alley, the newspaper of the Phillips neighborhood. It's a cover article.
Very good.
And also, we brought up things about Lindsey Graham, who is really still pushing the war in the Ukraine. Well, he's been at it a long time. This is a picture I saw when I was just getting into understanding the war there. And that picture was in the Ukraine in this kind of dugout during the war. I think it was 2016, of Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and Amy Klobuchar, the senior senator from Minnesota. And they were all promoting the fighting that war. Well, and Dave Logsdon has one more thing to say.
Yeah, just one more quick thing. The St. Paul water, people that control the water in St. Paul, regional water thing, they employed a group called Waterfall, which is a Israeli-based cybersecurity company, to do their cybersecurity. And we were a group of us, the Anti-War Committee, WAM, and Vets for Peace, paid a visit to their meeting out there just a couple days ago. And we're urging people to call the St. Paul Water, I forget the site on it, but you can look it up, and make your opinions felt about why St. Paul is employing Israeli government for our cybersecurity.
Indeed. Well, I didn't know about that, so thank you.
One more historical and literary note. It's actually a problem with personalizing politics too much. It's Putin with Trump. But obviously these personalities do matter. And I want to mention a famous American novel by Melville, The Confidence Man, which describes Trump to a T and certain elements of the American spirit, as it were. The Confidence Man, a great book. That's where our phrase, the con man, comes from.
Ah,
really?
Interesting. Well, I've got time for playing a little bit more of Douglas McGregor on the Daniel Davis deep dive.
The hard way. You mentioned there about this 1%. That was actually Ambassador Whitaker who said that Russia hadn't made any progress, so really we don't need to worry about it. Here's how he put it.
In the last 18 months, Russia has gained about 1% of Ukrainian land. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're making no success. They're losing thousands of soldiers every single day. And way too many private citizens in Ukraine and the big cities are being injured. So I think this is a great next step in finally ending this war. But again, if Vladimir Putin wants to continue to fight on the battlefields of Ukraine, the United States of America will sell Europe armaments so that they can be used by Ukraine to defend themselves.
Do you think they actually believe that these weapons can help Ukraine defend themselves when it hasn't worked in 3.5 years? Or is it just, hey, this is what the boss said, so that's what we're going to parrot?
Well, I met Whitaker in the green room at Fox when I was in and out of that place, and he's a very nice guy. And he may be informed enough or credible enough to make decisions or sweeping pronouncements about legal matters. At the time, I think he was the acting attorney general or something. But he knows nothing about military affairs, and he's simply reading from the script. You know, I think there was this statement, Russians are losing thousands of people a day when he's out of his mind. That hasn't happened for at least 2-3 years, if ever. I mean, they've never taken those heavy losses on them every day in this war. It's the Ukrainians that have done that. I don't think he has any idea what ground truth is, and I don't think he's really interested, because he was appointed to that position to say whatever President Trump and the administration want him to say. So I wouldn't attach any significance to anything the man says.
You know, the problem is with it is, though, there's, and we'll see how much of a problem it actually turns out to be, but of course people who watch Legacy News, they hear him, you know, the UN ambassador, he's got that imposing figure, he's got a good projection of voice. They hear that and they go, okay, well, it must be true. That, along with the other highly qualified 4-star general Jack Keane.
For anyone who wants to look into the exaggerated claims of Russian deaths, the only really good Western source, MediaZone, it's out of either Brussels or Netherlands. MediaZone.com has careful investigation, and their estimate is like in the range of 150,000 Russian dead.
That's quite different. I mean, both of us are both against war, but I've come to the idea that to get to peace and to stop war, you have to understand how and why wars begin, and that it you can't just say no, which is a good thing to do. We're going to have a program on conscientious objection at the end of the month, but it's we'll be getting to that. Well, this has been the Northern Sun Radio News Show with your host, Don Olson, and next up we'll have a Global Beat with Doug McCain.
Welcome to MN90, Minnesota History in 90 seconds.
The 1960s, a knock at the door, or simply a turn of the knob, and there he was once again, Carew Kent, the American businessman who, since the late 1950s, had been making regular, if infrequent, visits to the Hessheimers of Munich, Germany. The kids, Dirk, Astrid, and David crowded around the tall, balding man with his brown leather suitcase. He was their mom's special friend. That was all they knew or were allowed to ask. The next morning, Kent would be in their kitchen whipping up his specialty, American pancakes with maple syrup. As they tucked into breakfast, Crew Kent entertained them with stories, nothing too personal. He was a man of secrets. They respected that. It was only after his death in 1974 and their mother's death in 2001 that the kids unpacked those secrets. That Carew Kent was Minnesota-born aviator Charles Lindbergh, and that they were